Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It's best of week. Sean here for Steve. Don't forget our Sunbury, our Steve Jones Show podcast, available on iTunes, Apple Podcast app, and Google Play. Drop these shows right into your mobile device after they air live on WKOK. All you do is search Steve Jones Show at either of those podcast platforms, or just go to stevejonesshow.com. We've got 3 months of shows archived there all the time. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU. Later this hour, we'll have Steve's conversation with the voice of the Philadelphia Eagles, Merrill Reese. We talked to Merrill a couple of days after the Eagles claimed their first NFL crown since 1960 and first Super Bowl Vince Lombardi trophies. We'll hear from Merrill a little later on in the hour. Also, the day after Penn State won the NIT basketball championship at Madison Square Garden, Steve had a chance to talk to David Jones from PennLive.com, and it was also a couple of days before David received his prestigious honor of being inducted into the United States Basketball Writers Hall of Fame.
How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Doing well. How about you? How late did you get back?
I got about 4 hours of sleep, and then my German Shepherd puppy woke me up, so there was no turning back at that point.
Never is. David, I want to turn to you to get some perspective on this. This was a young team making the turn to a veteran team that won this, as opposed to an older team that closed out and won it. So what did you see in the elements of this that are building blocks moving forward?
Well, it depends on how many blocks we have left, right?
That's right.
I don't know what Tony Carr is going to do. I don't pretend to know. I know I'm sure he would like to go to the NBA, but if he hears back that he's going to be the 47th pick in the draft or somewhere between the 40th and 47th, I question whether it would be a good idea for him to jump, simply because you don't get any guaranteed money. You don't get any guaranteed roster spot. You can get some pretty good money if you're in the top of the second round. You can make a deal where an agent makes you a deal to, look, I've got a contract in hand or a deal in place where we can get you on the summer league team, get you a free few hundred thousand dollars. But then there is no guarantee, and I don't really know if I don't watch enough NBA. Dick Girardi would probably be a better opinion on whether he thinks Tony's game is applicable to the NBA. I personally don't think he plays fast enough. I think that leisurely pace he plays with would be sped up a lot by bigger guards his size, who are 6'5", with that 6'7" reach, who can really move, like little guys like Justin Bivins, except they're a lot bigger. So that would be my concern. If he comes back and he has the attitude that he's had most of the last month, man, they would be formidable. They would be tremendous. And then this whole thing is a building block. Without him, then they have to rejigger a lot of things. I don't know what your opinion is. I think Josh Reeves might be the point guard. What do you think?
It depends on what they would see from Jahzir Bolden, for example. But Reeves, you and I both know, David, did a lot of, they put Tony off the ball at times. Because, look, there are ways of resting players as they play. One of them is to take the point guard off the ball. Well, Josh Reeves had the ability to do that, to then go to your point, which I think is pretty astute, that maybe he could be the guy that could run it at times.
Yeah, I don't think that, from what I've heard about Rasir Bolton, he's not a true point. He's more of a hybrid, a smallish shooting guard. He's not going to be nearly as strong with the ball as Tony. And Jamari Wheeler on the offensive end, I really don't know what he gives you. He's like a situational player where you put him in for defense and defense only. So I think it would be Josh Reeves' ball if Tony leaves, in my opinion. And with Miles Dredd, who's a really good recruit out of the D.C. area, they might not drop off that much. They'd be a very different team, but I think they'd still have a shot at the NCAAs next year. It'd just be a different kind of team, for sure.
Let's go through something here now. I think that's important because you and I both know that, you know, this is a heavy football area. So because it's a heavy football area, they understand how the NFL draft works. Within 2 weeks after the season, you put your name in, and then boom, that is it. Now you go to All-Star games, then you go to combines, then your pro day. This process is completely different, and I think there needs to be some education as to how the process actually works, which you know well.
Yeah, they've really liberalized it recently, and Tony might not make his decision until early June because you can, and as long as you don't hire an agent, you can take that long. If you hire an agent up front, then it's irrevocable. But if you don't, you can test the waters, get lots of advice, get opinions from NBA people, and then make your decision. It all depends on whether you hire an agent. And, you know, the smart thing to do is to not get all your opinions first. And that's the way the more recent rule has been designed. It's the smart way to do it, and it's much, much better than prior.
You're going to go to the Final Four in San Antonio. Give me a quick thought or two about the Final Four matchups tomorrow night and a couple of things you're going to be zeroing in on.
Well, I always liked Michigan to make this thing. Mm-hmm. I just think they have a new emphasis on defense that they've never had before. You used to see Michigan, and even John Beilein teams, a really, really good coach, but you would see as recently as 2 years ago, and they've been transformed by this assistant coach, too. Their defense has been really, really good this year. I believe it's number four in efficiency in the whole country, as judged by KenPom, which is actually better than their offense.
Yeah.
They don't really try to turn you over much, but as everyone saw, if they went to the Penn State game in State College, my God, Xavier Simpson is a tremendous on-ball defender, and they've got guys who take defense seriously. As one of their coaching staff says now, you don't hope the other team's going to miss; you have to make them miss. And Michigan has done that. I think you could say arguably the best defense Penn State played this year was when they scored 63 points against Michigan. Would you not?
I think so because they're that good. The one area of Michigan, you know, it's interesting how Leonard Hamilton was criticized in quarters by the last 11 seconds and not fouling in a 4-point game. Okay.
Yeah, you're going to the free throw shooting, right? Yeah,
right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to this part. I'm watching the game, David, and I'm thinking with 3 minutes to go, Florida State should start fouling. You got to think outside the box. You have to think outside the box when you need possessions, and because of Matthews and Simpson, that's the one area where if you get into that bind, you can then, I think, with that three and a half minutes to go, sometimes get yourself additional possessions by playing it that way. What do you think about
it? Well, it's worth pointing out that Duncan Robinson had the ball with 11 seconds. So Leonard King.
Right, yeah, exactly right. There's your 90% guy.
Yeah, he's one guy who's going to hit those free throws. So
yep.
I thought it was much ado about nothing, even though that is what the standard thing you do. Sure,
right.
But I mean, 11 seconds, you're down four, and Duncan Robinson's going to line. You're probably going to lose. It's not a big deal.
Right.
That said, there have been dicey free throw shooting teams who did a lot of other things well, who if they got the ball to the right guy, that it was going to work out for them. And I think Beilein is due, man. I just think he's due as a coach. He's been so good for so long. And it's not like they've got a bunch of stumble bums up there who can't, all of them who can't shoot free throws. Abdul-Rahman's about 75%. Jordan Poole might be out there. He's 82%. Mo Wagner's 70 or 71, somewhere in there. They've got guys who can put on the floor who are not going to hurt them on defense, who will take care of that. And, you know, we didn't mention Duncan Robinson. What is he, 88 or 89? Yeah. I think guys they'll have on the floor at the end, you're usually going to get around that. I don't think it's that big a deal. And the upside for Michigan is their versatility. They can do so many things, especially with John Teske has really been playing well as a big man, as a second big man. He's kind of mirrors the improvement of John Horoff, who has played so well the last month for Penn State. The more playing time he's gotten, I mean, I don't know if you can believe that guy, but I never thought he would be that good a player, do you? I mean, he is a big-shouldered rebounder, and he gets his hands on a defensive board. He doesn't let it go very often.
I thought, as I watched him, I thought he was a work in progress, so I didn't know where he'd be right now, because I thought he'd be a work in progress. I thought he would be a guy that if he got into a role of rebounding and screening, he could help them. But he did a little bit more around the bucket, even though it was just a couple baskets here and there, but he really helped them there, especially offensive rebounding.
Yeah, he's got good hands, and that's what we heard about him. You wonder about a football player, especially a line guy, whether they're going to have dexterous hands. But he does. You know, he gets a ball. It doesn't usually slip out of his hands. And it was funny. Larry Krystkowiak was talking about how his guys were getting their hands on balls, and then they would slip out. And Penn State's guys doesn't happen with Lamar Stevens and. And hurrah. I mean, I think he has really improved to the point where you can think about using him for 15 or 16 minutes now next year. And that's something we probably didn't anticipate.
Oh, nearly two decades ago, I get a call from David. And David, you know, I got moved up to the football position. And David says, look, I want to write something. He says, I want you to trust me. You know I'll do a good job with it. And, of course, I trusted him, and he did an awesome job with it. I want to now return the favor to you. And that is this. You are going into the U.S. Basketball Writers Association Hall of Fame. When you
devaluing Dick Girardi's award.
You and I were both there that day for that. It was great.
Your induction has forever been devalued.
But what did it mean to you when you found that out?
Oh, I was stunned. I smiled all day. I was doing stuff as the football writers, the other trade association we have, the Football Writers Association of America. I was president last year. So you have to go around and you hand out a lot of awards. And I was in Charlotte when Joe Mitch from the Basketball Writers called me. And, you know, I thought maybe somewhere down the line it might happen in football. I never dreamed it would happen in basketball. And it made me so happy because, you know, people probably realize I really love college basketball. I adore college basketball. And for my peers to think of me that way, really having worked at a mid-sized paper all this time for a, let's face it, a program that is not exactly Indiana, it was a wonderful, wonderful surprise. It was tremendous. So I'm really excited about Monday.
Which then brings me to the next part. A lot of times we will see these items happen, and there'll be writers from, and justifiably so, by the way, Los Angeles, New York, Chicago. I mean, Charlie Pierce, Boston is going to be a part of this.
Yeah, Lou Friedman from Chicago. Yeah,
exactly. You've carved out all of this, with all due respect, out of Harrisburg. How touched are you that recognition of someone who does great work, but works out of Harrisburg is recognized nationally like that?
You know, I think I drank beer with the right people. Is all it really comes to. I've gotten to know some influential people, and I can tell stories around beers. I think that's really all it comes down to, and they laugh. I don't know. I got no idea, dude. I'm just happy.
I think it speaks volumes about the work. I mean, that's what it speaks volumes about. Now, I want to go to the next part. Your mother was wonderful.
Hey, you were great. You were great to her, man. That was. I'll always remember that. What was it? It's been 12 years now, right?
Yeah. It's been a dozen years. Have you thought at all what she would think about Monday morning?
Oh, she would. She was the kind of mom who watched the Cincinnati Reds with me because I was watching them when I was 12 or 11. And she learned about baseball. I don't know how your mom was, but she learned about sports because she had empathy and inclusion in her heart. She was a saint. And the only reason she watched sports is because I was watching them. That's why she watched and learned. Yeah, she was a great mom, and she ended up playing catch with me more than my dad did, simply because she wanted to make her little boy happy, and she was available. The thing about I should tell people that I had my mom up to meet Joe Paterno. Because, against my better judgment, because you don't want to put yourself in any kind of compromising position, and that's kind of a special thing. But Joe said he would do it, and my mom always kind of wanted to meet him. So this was, what was that, 2006, I think?
Yeah, 2006.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And you, I forgot about a gig like this. I had to do a radio show. I don't know if it was Columbus or Chicago, someplace I forgot about it. And the guy calls, and I went, oh, God. So I had to do something quick because my mom is 87 in a lobby of a hotel up on the north side of Columbus, and I've got to leave for 15 minutes. And you just sat and kept her busy. I asked you to do it, or either I didn't even ask you to do it. You just went and did it, right? You just started talking to her, right?
Yeah, I just started talking to her. Yeah.
Yeah, because you realized she was just sitting there and had nobody to talk to, which is one of the nicest. You know, she liked you better than she liked Paterno. She told me that later. So that's Steve. What's his name? Steve Jones. I really liked him.
Well, I thought she was marvelous. I had a great time with her.
You know, the thing is, buddy, we cover this program, which, how would you term this program? I mean, it's been, how long for you? 34 years? 35? How long have you been doing it?
I just finished my 36th season.
Oh, my God. And think of all the crappy basketball you've seen. But you have to be invested in it. You have to be hopeful for your listeners. And we're always trying to figure out, well, what will it take for this program to ascend to a level where it's at least stable? And here we are.
That's a really good point. Yep.
Well, go ahead.
No. I'm saying that's a really good point. What is it going to take for it to ascend to a level where there's a level of positive consistency? How about that?
And neither of us have ever seen it. In all these decades, we've never seen that happen, right? Am I missing a stage there?
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
I guess 90 to 96 is the closest they came. But in the middle of that was the a 2-16 Big Ten season. So you can't call that stable. And I there is no other stage that I know of. So, you know, we love the freaks, though, around this program who remain fans. And we can probably name five or 10 guys who are just, they remain hopeful.
Oh.
It's a weird program, man.
I know. One last personal question for you. Along the way, did people discourage you from staying in the writing profession? And if so, what was it about you inside that said, no, this is who I am?
Oh, I would never listen to those people. This is what I found and what I loved. My degree is in industrial design. at Ohio State. I mean, I got my degree, and I was already writing high school sports for the Columbus Dispatch. I had already made my decision, this is what I want to do, before I graduated from Ohio State. And I loved it. The first time I got a byline was like, wow, this is it. So I went ahead and got the degree. No one could have dissuaded me. It's the best way to make a living I can think of. And you probably think the same thing of what you do.
Oh, no, I thoroughly, completely love what I do. Completely
love it. We're getting paid for this.
I know. We get paid to do this.
What a scam.
And you know what? I know. Don't tell anybody. But one final point about that. One thing about you, you'll write, to me, a really good column is one that makes you think. I may agree with every part of it, some of it, or none of it, but if it makes you think, you always make me think. Number two, whenever I read your column, because of all the times I've talked with you, it's like reading how you speak.
Well, I always loved, you know, everyone's got a favorite writer if they read a lot. And the more I read, you know, when you first start writing, you think, thank you, first of all. Those are really nice things to say. And the one guy I always loved to read, and I started thinking about why I loved to read him, was the late film critic Roger Ebert.
Yeah.
He was a Big Ten graduate also, went to Illinois. And he, you know, a lot of film critics, and I like reading movie reviews, at least I used to, because there used to be a lot of great movie reviewers out there, Jay Cox and Richard Schickel and all these guys. But Ebert was always the best, because other guys, you love to read the bad reviews of bad movies because they were funny. You know what I mean? You know, they were, Jay Cox it was fantastic at Newsweek. You know, when he got a bad movie, it was hilarious. You know, but Ebert made you love reading his reviews of movies he loved. He loved the business of cinema. He loved the business of great movies, popular movies, art movies, all kinds of movies. He loved it. And you start thinking about why, and it's because he thinks. He didn't try to create word art. He didn't try to create prose, and that's what you do when you start out when you're young. You think, oh, I've got to sound like Gary Smith. No, you don't.
Right.
All you have to do is think. Think, keep asking yourself why, in every sense. Why do people act this way? And if you really think about it, you'll have an answer. It might not always be the right answer, but at least it's worth talking about. It's interesting because the human condition, because people are weird and they do funny things. And that's what that's the way Ebert describes movies. And the more I read him, the more I loved him, because every time he wrote something, you could tell he thought. He didn't try to write until he thought. And so that's, to me, that's the greatest compliment you can give to any writing, that they're not trying to fake it. They're not posing. They're actually trying to think about the situation. Now, maybe they got their base information wrong, or maybe their take wasn't too accurate in one way or another, but at least you know they tried to think about whoever was doing what and why they were doing it. And that's what I love about
Dick Girardi's like that.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. I mean, Dick never wrote flowery purple prose, ever.
Nope.
Ever. But you got done with his column, and you know he's not faking it. He's not trying to put on any airs. He's not trying to make you impressed with him. He's just telling a story. Just telling a story, man, and trying to give you some answers. That's it.
Well, I appreciate the time you gave us today, because I wanted to not only talk about Penn State or the Final Four, but I thought it was also important for people to get just a better feel on you, how you got to this point, and you know, and about an honor. But maybe, I know Bob Flounders wrote something really, really great about that, but maybe a lot of other people didn't realize that this honor was going to happen. I wanted to make sure everybody knew about it.
That's really nice of you, Steve, and I don't know where the radio play-by-play man Hall of Fame is, but I'll go if you get inducted.
Well, I appreciate that. I apologize. I won't be in San Antonio, because if it were closer, I would give it a shot. So,
Yeah, Girardi's not going to be there either. He's going to the track. He doesn't care. He said if he hits the rainbow six or something, then he'll book a $3,000 flight and come down.
And you and I both know he is going out to the Rainbow Six.
The man never didn't take a big swing in his life. Is that not true?
Oh, he's something else, isn't he? He knows where the fences are. In fact, before Major League Baseball, in the recent years, started going with the uppercut swing, he was years above them.
All right, buddy.
David, safe trip. Congratulations. Enjoy every second of it. You earned it.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we're wrapping up June with the best of the Steve Jones Show on WKOK, Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Late Day News Roundup coming up at 5:06 with Matt Catrillo. 6:30, we'll have Phillies on deck. So with last night, thousands of Matt Catrillo's closest Yankees friends were at Citizens Bank Park last night. That was loud last night from the Yankee fans. That was huge. That surprised me. See if there's going to be just as many Yankee fans there tonight for Jake Arrieta and Luis Severino. 11-2, 2.24 ERA for Severino. Arrieta's sitting at 5-5, but he is an ERA of 6.97 in four starts this month. Arrieta did have his best start of June, last outing, struck out five, gave up three runs and four hits in six innings against St. Louis last Wednesday. Couple of Yankees players that have the most experience against Jake Arrieta, Giancarlo Stanton and Neil Walker. Stanton, 2-for-11, solo home run. Walker, a 243 average at 37 at-bats against Jake Arrieta. Yankees' best record in the majors at 51-25, and getting the win last night by a score of 4-2. So we'll have it for you tonight. Game 2 of that three-game set, 6:30 for On Deck, and then 7:05 play-by-play with Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson here on WKOK. Quite the scene earlier this year at the Super Bowl, as the Philadelphia Eagles, for the first time since 1960, won an NFL championship, their first Vince Lombardi trophy. And a guy who has waited a very long time for that. Am I talking about Matt Catrillo or Merrill Reese? Both. Merrill's waited longer than you, Matt. The very beloved play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia Eagles, Merrill Reese. Steve had a chance to talk to him a couple of days after the Super Bowl.
And very, very pleased to bring in the voice of the Super Bowl champion, Philadelphia Eagles. I'm happy for a lot of people, but this is probably the person I'm happiest for, Merrill Reese.
Well, actually, Steve, thank you for saying that, but I disagree, because the people who deserved it more than me are the Philadelphia Eagles fans, and I mean that sincerely from my heart. I mean, you know what it's like to broadcast games with the team that achieves things and all the fun that that you've had with the Lions and that I've had with the Eagles over the years. But it's the fans who put so much into this with their investments and seats and their Eagles gear and the fact that they're out there, in the case of the Eagles, through thick and thin and thin and thin and thin, to be able to finally say, boy, our Eagles are Super Bowl champions. For this whole city, for this whole region, for Eagles fans everywhere, they are the ones who deserve it first and foremost.
I know we've seen how Philadelphia reacted when the Phillies have won a while back when the Flyers and obviously Sixers won. I always wondered how the city would react if the Eagles ever won. Now you see action. Is it about what you thought it would be, that release of joy?
Yeah, it is. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. And I've been around for the ones that you are referring to. But this is the biggest. This is going to be the biggest parade in the history of the city, I believe, by far.
All right, the game itself, we know that, look, you and I both know that Belichick has Ernie Adams, who breaks down every play of every game. Somewhere along the line, they have a book and everything. The one thing they didn't have that they could never find and still would not be able to find was the fourth down play, because the Eagles have their own guy, like Ernie Adams, who goes through plays. And when they saw the Vikings-Bears, that's what opened the door for it. How important was it for the Eagles not only to put the play in, but at the same time, Merrill, how important was it that when they got to Minnesota, they only did it in walkthrough and not in an actual practice where anybody could see it?
Well, nobody could have seen it in a practice either, because those practices were completely closed. Unless there was some maintenance man someplace hiding on a rafter. But then again, Bill Belichick does go to extremes, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
But the truth of the matter is, I want to tell you how brilliant I am. Before that play, it's fourth and one, and here's what your announcer said. I said, I have to tell you the truth. If it were me, I would take the 3 points right here, because these are the New England Patriots. I said, you've got to get the points. It's if you fail and you take a chance and you fail, it's a big momentum swing, and they're going to receive the kickoff to start the second half. That was uttered with all my brilliance, and as Mike Quick said, that's why you're up here and he's down there.
Well, funny thing is, Trey Burton played quarterback against Penn State in the Outback Bowl.
Sure. Yeah.
But he had never thrown a pass in the league. You were around Nick Foles. You and I have had many conversations over the years. And when Nick Foles was a part of the Eagles, you were a very big Nick Foles guy. What is it about him that you always liked and then you saw even more of when he finally had a second opportunity?
Well, I like his poise. I like the fact that he's such a great kid, that he's not an ego guy, that he's one of the guys I know that, and he has that no stage is too big feeling. He's not afraid, and he's got great touch on his passes. I mean, he doesn't have a gun the way that Carson Wentz has a gun, but he has a lot of touch, and he knows his limitations. There was an opportunity at one point where he could have run for a few yards and maybe slid down, but he stayed away from it. He took a chance, and it was an incompletion. But he, unless there's a real clear path to a first down and ultimately the sideline, Nick's not going to be running. So he knows what he can do and what he can't do, and he's a team guy and a very, very accurate passer.
In fact, not one time during the game did Nick Foles cross the line of scrimmage. I mean, one time.
And not one time did he get sacked either.
Right, didn't get sacked either. In a game where the Eagles gave up 33 points, I want to get your read on this. I thought what Jim Schwartz did with Malcolm Jenkins, essentially taking the Patriots running backs out of the pass game, I thought was one of actually the bigger moves of the game. What did you think about that strategy, the fact that he used Jenkins in that way?
Well, there's nothing that Jim Schwartz would do that would surprise me. I mean, he is a very innovative and very bright defensive coordinator. Although, I know that Jim Schwartz is not exactly proud of the way the Eagles play defense on Sunday night. I mean, they did give up a lot of yards. I mean, Brady threw for over 500 yards. Yeah. So you don't puff out your chest and say, Well, we stopped them when we had to, but they did stop them when they had to. But I know that Jim Schwartz was happy with the fact that this team won the Super Bowl. But if you were to have him evaluate the defense honestly, he would give them a below-average grade.
Right. Well, and yeah, 33 points, 600 yards, yeah. Any defensive coordinator would feel that way. Obviously, I was around Stefan Wisniewski a lot when he was here. He's around the Eagles now and with you and the starter on that left side. What did you think of his play as the season played out for them?
Boy, I'd hate to think where they would be without Stefan Wisniewski. He did a great job. And, again, you're talking about a great person, a class guy who fit into the team. But he's a good football player. He really is. And he had a very good Super Bowl.
You know, the way the game played out, the fact that they, for the most part, until late, how important did you think it was that the Eagles were consistently staying two scores ahead of the Patriots for two-thirds of that game?
You know, I didn't think it was that big a deal. At halftime, the Eagles were up, 22-12?
Yeah.
I think that was the halftime score. And we got a short break, and somebody said to me, well, the Eagles are up 22-12. How do you view that? What does that mean? I said, I don't feel it's any different than if it were 0-0.
Right.
Because these are the Patriots. This is a right. team that made up a 28-3 deficit the year before. It never felt safe. It never felt safe. And the fact that they held the lead into the fourth quarter and then the Patriots took the lead.
Right.
Patriots took the lead in the fourth quarter, and then Nick had to march him down one more time. And not for a field goal, but for a touchdown to Zach Ertz.
Ertz is something else, isn't he? I mean, you want to talk about a guy that's really come on and just played well. I mean, what a privilege it's been probably for you to watch how he's played for them, how important it is to how he's played.
Oh, he's been great. He's a Pro Bowl tight end. He's not Gronk, but he's really good. I mean, Gronk might be the best pass-catching tight end of all time. But, oh, my goodness, is Ertz good? I mean, he's really good. So there's not a big drop-off between Gronk and Ertz. It's superstar and rising star. But Ertz is special. But you know what? It's not just Ertz. How about the kind of game Aguilar had?
He's tough.
How about the catches?
He's tougher than I thought he was.
Oh, he's tough. And how about the catches that Alshon Jeffrey made?
Oh.
I mean, he was incredible. How about the catch that Corey Clement made?
Yeah.
And you want to hear a funny story? On Saturday afternoon, somebody came up behind me in the lobby and bear hugged me from behind and lifted me off the ground a few feet. And I turned around laughing, and I said, "Who is this?" And he put me down, and it was LeGarrette Blount. And he said to me, he said, "That ring." He said, "Take care of that thing. I'm getting you a real ring tomorrow afternoon, because I'm fortunate enough to wear the NFC Championship ring from 2004. He said, "I'm getting you a real one, not a runner-up ring. I'm getting you a real ring tomorrow, Merle." I saw him come out of the locker room after the game. He said, "See, I told you I got to get your ring. I got your ring." And he, by the way, turns out to be one of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet in your life.
When you're around teams like that, though, you and I both enjoy our jobs a lot, regardless.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, okay? But when you're around teams like that, it just takes it to another level, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is such a good team. This is such a great group of guys. And their demeanor is the best I've ever seen. It all starts with Doug. I mean, Doug's that way. Nothing phases Doug. Nothing sets him off. He's strong. He's authoritative. He's a player's coach. They feel comfortable with him. He's transmitted his outlook to this team each week. He says, "Let's go 1-0. Let's go 1-0," and that's all they think about is that game. But they're a good group. As the week went on, approaching the Super Bowl in Minnesota, I didn't see one guy who got cranky or snappy or, "Hey, stay away from me." They were just the same guys that they were going into the third game of the season. They were the same group.
What can you say about the job Howie Roseman did to assemble this?
Howie and his public, Howie and his personnel staff did a great job. I still think that Howie made the greatest move in the history of the franchise last year when he got the Miami Dolphins to accept Kiko Alonso and Byron Maxwell and moved from 13th to 8th in the draft, and then got the wonderfully inept Cleveland Browns to give him the number 2 spot so that he could take Carson Wentz. That's the most monumental move in Eagles history. It turned everything around. So, but then the guys they brought in the offseason, I mean, you're talking about last year they brought in Wisniewski, then bringing guys like Alshon. I mean, they had to step up the receiving department, and they bring in Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith, who made some good plays in this game. Torrey Smith, they brought in those two, and then how about you lose your kicker, Caleb Sturgis, a good, solid, dependable kicker, and the next day you bring in Jake Elliott, who's been a hero. So, I mean, and then how about the trade? They trade Ronald Darby. They get Ronald Darby. They give up a popular, talented player and Jordan Matthews, and they get Ronald Darby, who's been an outstanding corner. So they've just done it. Oh, they've done a great job. No doubt about that.
Every foot of that parade, I want you to enjoy it, okay?
Okay.
every foot of that parade, you enjoy.
Every foot of it. I haven't heard from them yet, but the word I got from somebody who was at meetings is that Mike Click and I will host it, but I haven't heard anything yet officially.
Well, something.
But I would imagine I will be a part of. I'll be included.
I think they will include you, and you can look out among all those people that you say deserve it more than anybody else. And you can have a great back and forth with them like you always have.
Well, it's just a great feeling, Steve. It really is. It's been a great run. It's been the greatest season I've ever been a part of. And to this day, I'm telling you, I wish I could say to you, boy, I felt going into this season that if any team would ever go to a Super Bowl, it's this one. Here's what I said. If this team can stay relatively healthy, they can win 10 games, 9 or 10 games, and they can be a team. They can be a team that goes to the playoffs and even has a chance to win the NFC East. But they have to stay healthy. So all they did was lose Jason Peters, Jordan Hicks, Darren Sproles, Caleb Sturgis, Chris Maragos, and then Carson Wentz. And I'm sitting here talking about the fact that this team just won the Super Bowl. I think I keep worrying that I'm going to wake up tomorrow and that the season was over and they finished 13-3 and lost to the Atlanta Falcons.
Well, guess what? They didn't lose to the Falcons. They beat them, too. So,
and you know what? Because the last pass, the Julio Jones was a little bit high.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's how close that came to this derailing things. But they did it. This is the most resilient team I've ever seen.
Well, to everyone in Philadelphia, to the Eagles, and to you, congratulations. Well deserved.
Thank you, Steve.
Well deserved.
Thank you very much.
The legendary, marvelous man himself, about as nice a guy as you'd ever want to meet, talk to, whatever, Merrill Reese, the voice of your Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles.